Come and take a seat, everybody. We're going to get underway with a very precious subject. It's actually a bit close to my heart as well. As you've seen me around the ridges this weekend, looking at music, the joy of music and how therapeutic it can be in our lives. We see it here and we experience it in this environment, don't we? At the seniors' convention when we sing the hymns and the songs and we're uplifted by the lyric, but also the music that comes in behind it and that just inspires us to sing louder, sing more enthusiastic, focus on the words, and it just attacks our souls sometimes, doesn't it? I just want to share a bit of an anecdote. I don't know how it relates to this, but it's interesting how this works. My wife's good friend in Sydney, her father-in-law was in an aged care facility in Sydney. And in this particular facility, there was a gentleman who was very dementia-ed and difficult to handle, especially around bathing time, because he had to have assistance with that. But I don't know how it came to be, but someone discovered that when they played God Save the Queen, they could do anything with this gentleman, get him in the shower, and he was happy, and it was all success. Now, I don't know what that influence was or how it came about. Carmen might be able to give us a bit of an insight into that, especially with God Save the Queen being played, and he was cooperative with that. But there you go. That's how it works with us. Music is a very integral part of our lives. It's in the air everywhere, and it can have a significant impact on who we are and our being. So as we get underway, let's pray. Dear Lord, we thank you for the opportunity we have to look at this subject this evening. We see right through Scripture, dear Lord, in the praise and worship of your holy name as music and instruments being used to praise your wonderful name. And so we pray, dear Lord, as we look at in depth a little bit more into this, that you would open our hearts and minds to see how much of a benefit it can be to us and for us to share it with others. Amen. I want to introduce you to Dr. Carmen Clinch. She's been a music therapist for almost 20 years, and that's where her work and doctoral research began. Her time now is spent specialising in children and youth mental health. She is known for her long, outstanding contribution to acute child and youth mental health and works in an inpatient facility at a Brisbane hospital. Dr. Carmen also teaches a Master of Music Therapy course at the University of Melbourne. We'll get the state right, Melbourne. Her ongoing research interests are in studying how music contributes to mental health, resilience, and the well-being in us adults. As her personal interest in music making and health in aging, she's seen that first in the benefits in her own parents who are in their 80s now. So let's give her a big welcome as she comes to bring her topic to us this afternoon. Thank you. Thank you, Carmen.
Hello, everyone. Hello. I don't know who he was talking about. It wasn't me. So thank you, and thank you for the warm welcome. I have to say on the outset that looking at all of you here, I feel quite out of my depth because all of you bring to, you know, here and to me your collective knowledge, experience, and wisdom. And and I will just bring a little bit to maybe inspire more of your thinking and living the way you all do already. So yes, I am a music therapist. I have been a music therapist for many, many years now, and specializing in child and youth acute mental illness, actually. I work in the Queensland Children's Hospital in an inpatient setting where young children from as young as 4 to 18 years old are admitted into an acute mental health inpatient unit. So, yes, I've seen it all, and nothing will surprise me ever again. But I think what I have learned from my job is seeing the power of music. And certainly, my research has demonstrated that. And that's been a long time coming. And in recent years, I have actually gone from research in child and youth mental health to well-being, looking at how music promotes and builds well-being. So that's where I will be speaking from. But I have had a lot of help, including all of you here, along the way. I might look a bit youthful, but actually I am well into my middle age. Very well into. Yes, Ross, we grew up together, didn't we? So over 30 years ago, so you do your maths, please. Over 30 years ago, I had the pleasure of being introduced to my dear husband's family. I have not had a lot of encounters with people of advanced age. I was born in Singapore many, many years ago. Believe me, it was many years ago. And I have no memory of my paternal grandparents because they died soon after the Second World War in Singapore. I have vague recollection of my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, but that's just vague because she died when I was six. My maternal grandfather favored boys. So I didn't get a look in at all. And then in my teens, I left and went to school in the US. And so when he did die, I didn't know how old he was. So when I came to live here in Australia, you do the maths, and I met Jim, I was introduced to his family. Now Jim, here I am telling you my life story. Jim grew up, was the youngest of a very large family. He was the surprise baby of middle-aged parents. Surprise! Here's Jim. And so all his aunts and uncles were very much older than my own parents. Yeah? So here is Auntie Zoe, right on the left. Auntie Zoe would do quilling. And that's the sort of stuff we got for Christmas cards. Auntie Peg, next to her, painted. And my mother-in-law, Joyce, played the piano and organ every day. And that's Uncle Colin over there, who sang at every family gathering. So that was 30 years ago. The last 30 years, things haven't really changed very much in terms of what older people do. They're still active. They're still doing stuff. But it was new to me. And that's why all of you are here. You're still doing stuff, regardless. That's how you live. You know no different, isn't it? You get up and you do it every day. But more and more, what we are seeing, and this is what I have been studying, the trend. What's the health trends these days? Now, 30 years ago, we were talking about how to prolong life. What are the benefits of doing certain things in order to prolong life? Thank you. Now, in the last 10 years, our trends have changed. It is no longer about prolonging life because our life has been prolonged. We are living past our 65, 70 years, aren't we? We are now learning about how to complement longevity, how to promote well-being while living longer. And so that's what we are doing. If you think that I'm going to give you some benefits, well, I'm not. But I like to show you, not only through my own research, but also help what is going on. Thank you. But also from my own experience with my parents. And those are the stories I wish to share with you today. The trends have changed now in research and in practice. We're looking at ways to complement longevity and complement the way we are living, regardless of age. And, you know, what it has done for me in the last 10 years is actually challenged and confronted all my ageist attitudes and ideas. So that's why I feel a bit out of my depth here. Because you guys have done so much more living and living well than I have. So thank you. And if you have any ideas for me, please let me know. Okay, so we are seeing a lot of stuff on ABC. How to live with older people. How older people should live with, will, you know, live with children and younger people, young teenagers, you know, keep on dancing, creativity for everyone. Has anyone seen any of these? Yeah. What did you think? Right. Inspiring, isn't it? It made me want to go out and do it. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Right. All that reality TV rubbish, you know. So I'm a bit of a runner myself. And a few months ago in the New York Times, there was this big article about 90-year-olds doing marathons. Now, that's mind-blowing. And if anyone has read the ABC News this morning, 95-year-old Marion is competing in a Masters Champion swimming this weekend. 95. I can't even swim 5 meters, and she's doing 50 meters. Yeah? So there's a lot of research out there that says, look, engage in activities to make sure you pay attention. Engage in everyday things, play, problem solve, socialize. And of course, music listening. We've heard people talk about it ad nauseam, about the cognitive benefits. I'll go into it a little bit. But what's coming through here is beware of technology. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, as you saw. The scrolling, it takes our focus away from the task at hand. It's actually our boredom playing out through our scrolling. Now, I tell my parents, if you don't use it, you lose it. And they've adopted it, yeah? So what I'd like to do next is to show you some of the research. So as you know, in my spare time, I teach the Master of Music Therapy at the University of Melbourne, and I do that online. Yes, I don't go to Melbourne every day. I do that online. And on the 7th and 8th day of the week, or 8th and 9th day of the week, I do some research as well. So on the left here is Anita Connell from the Western Sydney University. She's just finishing her doctoral study, looking at what instrument learning is doing to memory, functioning and quality of life. It is actually keeping people engaged. That's her preliminary findings at the moment. She's finishing that. She's in the writing up stage, and soon she will publish it. So it's keeping engaged through instrument learning. Now, my colleagues following at the University of Melbourne, we specialize in looking at what music therapy can do in the rehabilitation space. So again, the benefits of music. But in the last 10 years, we are looking at music and well-being. What are we doing to complement longevity? Yeah. So here is Imogen Clark, second on my left. She started out singing. Her research was about singing with people with Parkinson's disease. And soon it evolved, singing and well-being, being engaged. Dr. Felicity Baker, actually one of the most highly funded researchers in Australia, and in fact around the country, around the world, she's running international projects about music and reading activities for people living at home or for people who are living with someone who has early onset dementia. And this is about not just cognitive benefits, it's about well-being. It's what we can do together. So some of the tenets of well-being, are you hearing? What is promoting well-being? It's engagement, isn't it? It's being involved. It's doing things. It's not just a benefit. We are already living longer. Every one of you in this room, living longer, aren't you? We're no longer dying at 65 or 70 or 75, in fact. We might move a little slower, we were certainly not at the end of the road. And then there is Dr. Sarah Thompson at the end. Her doctoral research was about choir for people with dementia and their caregivers. It was an amazing project where she got all her choir members, including those with cognitive decline, to write songs. Yeah. Last month, actually this year, I've had the pleasure and privilege of being the professional development chair for our music therapy conference. So I had to organize the day of professional development for our music therapists. And I wanted it to be edgy. I wanted the music therapists to hear from people whom we do not always hear from. And so I invited Zara and her choir to come and talk to us. Now, eight older people, ranging from 85 to 93 years old, came to Melbourne City and shared their stories with us. Now, mind you, a few of them actually said, I have to write this out because I do forget what I want to say. And she read from her little script, and she did forget. And she had a carer there to sort of prompt her. But it was an amazing sort of witness for me to see that even with that bit of cognitive decline, she is still well and truly alive. She is still well and truly there. But what this choir is doing now is writing songs for dementia. We are not invisible. They've become activists. Now, how many of you out there were activists in your day? Imagine doing that with this group of people. It was amazing to watch. I was so humbled. I wanted to cry, I wanted to laugh, and I wanted to bow. I did all three. So that's the Musical Memories Choir. So I think there is a misconception when we get older. Yeah? A misconception that we no longer need to learn, or it's too hard. You do that when you're a child, or you do that when you're much younger. But you know, your brain is the same thing at 80 as the child, the 8-year-old child. Your brain doesn't change. Your knowledge does, your wisdom does, but your brain ability and capacity doesn't change. So what I love about my job, yeah, and all my jobs, I have a lovely synergy. I'm so, so fortunate, really, that my work as a music therapist, my research, in my personal life, they all overlap. And I want to share some stories of my parents. Yeah, they're up there. Mum and Dad, Nancy and Henry. Yeah, anglicized names. Yeah, they've been here in Australia for over 30 years. They are now people of the age that Jim's parents and aunts and uncles were back 30 years ago. Yes, Mum did dye her hair. Yeah. Okay. So they are in their mid-80s. So a little bit about them. They were born around World War II in Singapore. They were poor, which meant they didn't have much education. And of course, my mother, whose father favored sons, didn't get much of an education at all because she was a girl. Naughty boy. So, they thought, well, learn? Are you serious? And so they did. Mum, 20 years ago, and I'll let Jim talk about it in a while, 20 years ago, decided to learn to play the organ. And one of the things she got out of that was, wow, and a sense of achievement. Now, for someone who is not educated, for her to be able to learn something is a huge accomplishment. And I'm so proud of her for doing that. Now, she really wanted to show this to you. She really wanted to be here, actually, but I told her, no, you can't come. So this is Mom playing the organ. Are you ready, Dave? No sound. Okay. You don't need to hear much sound. But that's Mom playing the organ. Yeah? She has a message for you guys. Her message is, learn. Don't stop learning. So here is Mom, not having gone to much school or education, and she's learned to do it. And she once wanted me to show you her gnarly hands, fingers. Not for pity, not to say, look, I've got arthritis. But look, I've got arthritis and I'm still playing. Because it makes me feel good. It makes me feel like I've achieved something. And it's an amazing feeling. I don't know about you, but when I see my mother play, and she likes to show off, she does. She loves to show off. She's already preparing her Christmas carols because she wants to play our family Christmas. Because she does. And why not? But when I see her play in front of her friends, the look of pride, the look of I've done something is amazing. It's amazing to watch. And it is only when you have done it for yourself that you can experience that sense of accomplishment and sense of being able to, I've climbed the mountain. So that's Mom. Yeah? Okay. Let's turn her off. And then, of course, there's my father. Here is dear Henry. He plays the ukulele. I know. He plays the ukulele. Yeah. Dad is 85. He's actually probably 87. But he'd lost his birth certificate in the war, so they go by the vaccination papers. All right. So he's probably 86, 87 years old. And he's played the ukulele since he was 78 years old. Now, I don't know how many people out here, 78 years old, you all look 60, maybe. Yeah. So Dad is a self-made man. If he's not watching his stock market, he is packing boxes at a friend's factory. That's Dad. He will play golf 3 times a week if he can. And then he looks at Jim, he says, I'm actually a little bit tired today. Of course he's tired. You've walked 18 holes, Dad, 3 days in a row. But you know what? He still managed to get his fingers around a ukulele. I don't know if you've seen a ukulele before. Have you? This is how small it is. He actually learned to play on this. I have about a few at home. It's actually quite hard to get your fingers around it. Yeah? So for someone whose fingers are hard, a man who's not afraid of hard work, who's only held a golf club, really, he got his fingers around this. But it's not just the learning that's given him a sense of achievement. It's the social connections that he's made. Dad goes to 2 groups a week, and one of the groups actually performs at a nursing home once or twice a month. That sense of giving back, the sense of, I am making music. In fact, someone in the nursing home who sat opposite him said, you didn't do that very well. You didn't sing that very well, she said to him. She actually said, you need to practice more. And Dad said, yes, I do. Because you know what? I don't know this song, and it's in English. This is my third language, and I still don't know the chords. But I'll learn it for the next time I'm there. Now again, that sense of achievement, but that sense of I'm going to do something for these people. Now, a few months ago, back June 11th, and I don't remember, know if you remember the day. I do, because it was damn cold. It was blowing a gust out there. We had the ukulele festival in the middle of Brisbane in King George Square. And Dad said, we're going to that. He dressed up, and there he is, right next to me in the hat. We dressed up, and we were there. We were there. Oh, do we have sound, Dave? Okay, what song was that? ABBA, right? Okay, maybe some of you don't know that. Do you know ABBA? Okay. ABBA is way ahead of Dad's time in a foreign language, really. Actually, they're from Sweden, so it's a fourth language. But here was Dad fronting up with his ukulele and playing and strumming away with hundreds of other people. And when I turn up to these ukulele things, they see me, hello, Carmen. If they don't see Dad, where's Dad? Where's Henry? Where's Henry? Forget about me. I'm not really important. Dad is. See, so it's not just the benefits, not just cognitive benefits. It's not about learning. It's about relationship. He's made friends. People who have reached out to him. Actually, they have been so lucky. My parents, they have been very, very blessed with friendships. People who remember them from way back. Thank you, Jen. You know? So that's the sort of people they are. Some months ago, we were in the elevator going down in my building. Dad stands there. You know, I know you think I'm old. Yes, Dad. But you know, I don't think I'm that old. I am 85. Yes, Dad, you are 85. But you know, I don't feel old. How many of you feel your age? Don't worry. Okay, sometimes, and sometimes I feel 35. Come on, I'm not 35. But you know, it's not how you feel, hey. It's what you can do, what keeps you going, what keeps you feeling good all the time. So yes, so here are my parents. I'm so impressed with them. I'm so proud of them. And I wish they were here because I want them to know that I'm so proud of them for doing the things that they have done. Not because there is a benefit, but because they've chosen to do it to complement their longevity. So we can learn to play an instrument for fun. There are no scales involved, I promise. Jim will tell you a little bit more. No boring exercises. No long practices and definitely no rulers. No rulers. It's absolutely pure joy and fun. So what I like to do is to get Jim to introduce a little bit about that, about how he taught my mother to play the organ. God help us.
I hadn't planned to stand up on the stage, but since Carmen's got the mic and the other mic is here, yes, I've been teaching people to play the organ since the 1980s, and I've been very fortunate to have included in among my students some octogenarians. And in fact, I was piloting a course for Yamaha back in the late 1980s, where they wrote a course that was aimed particularly for retirees. And it was easy stuff. And they said, we need someone to try this out. You've got experience teaching older people. Would you like to trial this? And so we went to a local retirement village, and I had about 10 people who came for the lessons, and they, I think the youngest of them was in their 70s and the eldest was nearly 90. And this was a group of people who had absolutely no previous experience with reading music or playing an instrument. There was one gentleman who had sung, but he said, "Oh, I can sing, but I can't read music." He said, "I've sung in choirs, but I can't read music." So we started from that point where nobody had any prior knowledge. And it was amazing to see that group of people and the fun that they had and what they achieved in the space of the first 10-week course. So much so that at the end of 10 weeks, they said, "Well, what's next? Where do we go now?" And so then I had to wing it because they hadn't written that part of the course to keep going. I'll just use something to demonstrate. Don't know whether you can see this, but that's a sheet of music. It's very large print, and the names of the notes are written on the notes. So as Carmen said, you don't have to do scales and you don't have to do exercises, and there are easy ways to learn. One gentleman from that class told me very proudly, he bought himself an organ very shortly after taking up the course, and he said, "I've always wanted to do this, but I really thought I was too old now." He was the guy, he was 89. He said, "I really thought I was too old, but I'm going to give it a go." And so he bought an organ and he practiced for hours every day. And I said to him, "Don't you get tired playing, practicing so long?" Oh, he said, "Oh, no, I love it." He said, "I love the sounds." And it got to the stage where after he'd been learning for a few months, I discovered that the people in the retirement village, the other residents, were dragging the instrument out of his room on a Saturday night so he could play for a sing-along for the community. Now, what a wonderful thing to do. And this was a man who had started at age 89, couldn't read music, but wanted to do it. He had the ability. Now, you've all had the wonderful experience of hearing some amazing musicians, and I know Cliff's been entertaining and leading lots of singing on the Allen, and Cliff's a man who's learned the right way and does it the right way and plays brilliantly. You don't need to do that much work. There are easy ways. Maybe not, you wouldn't have the panache that Cliff brings to the stage, but there are easy ways to play an instrument. I'm just going to show you very quickly with some help here using very elementary method. This instrument has all sorts of automatic assistance. Now, this is where the technology is kind to us. You don't need to work hard if you don't want to. I've had this at home for the last couple of months, and I've been playing it all on the automatic stuff and having a ball. That lives beside it in the room. When I want to do it the hard way, that's great. But this is the fun one. So let me show you how easy it is for someone who might be a beginner to get a good result. And a big hand for the boys in the band. Now, this is the way my students, including my mother-in-law, started playing. with all the automatic assistance that was available to them. And for some people, that's fine. They're happy to just do that and they get great joy out of it. There are some people who then say, what are the things on the floor there? What am I supposed to do with those? And some people will go on and learn, and they'll learn to do more ambitious things. And it's amazing to watch Carmen's mum, Nancy, such a dedicated student. But as Carmen said, her sense of achievement, you know, when I, you know, go for her weekly lesson, she started off in a group. And in fact, I had a group of people. We had a shop at Underwood at one time, and I had a group of five people who were all in their mid-80s, and they used to come for a group lesson every week. And, yeah, Carmen's got a photograph there somewhere of part of the class. Yeah, there they are. There's Ted and Millie in the foreground. Millie used to catch two buses. It used to take her an hour to get to the shop for her weekly lesson on public transport. But she came every week, as did the rest of them. When my business got busy in other areas and I had to give up teaching, I was not popular with that group of people, let me tell you, because it was something that they really looked forward to every week, and they made amazing progress, and they learned to play together. That was incredible. People who had such little musical knowledge or experience, and the way they worked together was fantastic. The way someone would say, oh, I'm having trouble with the pedals here, and then someone else in the group would say, I'll play the pedals. You don't worry about that. I'll do that part. You do the other part. And it was a lovely, lovely environment. Yeah, Carmen's mum started in that group class and then went to private lessons. And, yeah, she used to get so excited when, you know, she remembered all the chords. And only recently she was playing something, and it was fairly complex, and she apologised to me because she'd forgotten one chord in the piece. She'd memorised the notes for her left hand, and she apologised because she'd forgotten one. I think at 85, yeah, I'll give her that. I think you've heard enough from me. Told enough of the story?
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. So, yes, recreational music making. Do it, you guys. Look at my parents. They do it at home, with other people, in groups, in public events. It's so exciting. And for me, to witness that with my own parents, it's priceless. It's really, really priceless. So, I just want to sum up. We talked a lot and we got interrupted a lot too, and I do apologize and I do thank you for your patience and your continued attention here. I really want to come back to well-being. The trends have changed. Our research have changed. We're now living longer. There is not going to be a doubt about that. I think Jim and I will probably see 100, God forbid. But seriously, a lot of you probably will too. My father said to me, I didn't think I would live to 85. And I'm glad he has, because it's been such a joy to watch them do the things that they nurtured in me, the love of learning. So some years ago, I was looking at well-being. I don't know if you've heard of Martin Seligman. He established the positive psychology movement back about 20 years ago. It was just psychology trying to be sexy and new and trendy again and all that. But anyway, they called it positive psychology. There's nothing wrong with it. Instead of looking at health through a deficit lens, what's wrong with me and what can I do to improve myself and to cure this? It was looking at well-being. What can I do to engage, to promote my well-being? And Martin Seligman and his team of researchers found five things. It was called the PERMA model. To have positive experiences, to be engaged, to have meaningful relationships, to have meaning and purpose in life, and to have accomplishment. Yes, even at 85. So I've talked a lot, not actually too much, I hope, but I shared a lot of my parents' stories about their own music-making experiences. It was pure fun, pure pleasure, pure enjoyment. And when we engage in all those pleasures, you know what happens? We have feel-good hormones. It starts to kick in, and it goes ding, 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 ding. Now, where is Morris? Ah, you started the session today talking about singing. Yeah, that's what happens. Those feel-good hormones kick in. And after a good sing, all of you feel good, don't you? You all feel like you're on cloud nine. That's what happens when we engage in a lot of enjoyment. It's a brain and body workout when we learn something, especially a music instrument. And if you don't use it, guess what? Yeah, you lose it, eh? Make that your mantra. For my parents, what? Learning those instruments? You mean they all go together? Yes, it's a coordination. Visual, hands, feet, and the brain. I know it's been fantastic for my parents to meet new friends, to meet new people. Yes, even at 85. It's amazing. And most of all, a sense of meaning and purpose. Wow, I did it. A sense of accomplishment. So all of these things are not reserved for 8-year-olds or 28-year-olds. They're also meant for all of us at 68, 78, 88, and beyond. So I hope that today, this very interrupted talk has encouraged you to pick up an instrument. And if you already play, go back to your instrument. Go and find groups to play with. Or if you haven't, learn. Don't stop learning. Okay? So I'm just going to flash up some resources. And, you know, there are lots of things online. FletcherMusic.com has a wonderful page. I didn't want to reinvent this wheel. Has a wonderful page about recreational music making. Go and check them out. They're situated in Arizona, unfortunately. But actually, you can talk to Jim, because if it hadn't been for Jim, I wouldn't be doing this talk. Actually, if it hadn't been for Jim and Ross, I wouldn't be doing this talk. So I appreciate all of your attention and your patience today, and for being such a lovely audience.